Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I am joined by Saurabh Gupta. Saurabh is the founder of Plum Cloud Labs, a Salesforce partner and AppExchange product specializing in the data privacy, GDPR, CCPA, data privacy space. So through the episode, we hear more about Saurabh's early IT career, what first attracted him to the world of IT, and the roles that he has played over the years. We look at the Siebel days, what he focused on, the kind of projects he was involved in, and whether or not he saw the demise of Siebel coming, and if so, how he planned and prepared. We then look at what attracted him to the Salesforce ecosystem and what it was like to work for Salesforce for a number of years and the role that he played for the organization. We then look at where the idea of his product came from, how he saw the opportunity and the gap in the market, and then how he decided to leave Salesforce and the security of a high-paying, stable job with Salesforce to build a product. We then look at getting the product off the ground, what the first kind of 6 or so months were like, and where the business is at now, 18 months in. So it was really interesting to hear Saurabh's journey, both as an employee and now as a business owner, the life of running a product company, going through the ISV process with the AppExchange, and ultimately what his plans are for the future. So a really interesting episode. Hopefully you'll enjoy it. And if you do, please do subscribe for future episodes that are coming through. So Saurabh, thank you so much for joining us. I'm really excited to hear more about you, your product as well, and also your journey through the Salesforce ecosystem. I always like to start with going way back when, and I'd like to know a bit more about kind of your early career and what really interested you in working in the field of IT back in the early days.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be here. I think there is a really big need for a lot of people out there to know the journey of others who've, you know, like me, who've taken this plunge because a lot of such people inspired me. So my journey into IT is very atypical. I'm a pharmacy graduate. I have an MBA in international business, and I spent some initial part of my life in a bit of pharma sales and marketing as a medical rep, and then as a, you know, a little bit in management for sales and marketing. But the thing I so liked about technology, even in the early days, was that this was one place which was not constrained by physical realities of the world. You know, if you want to build a car, you need, you know, huge entry barriers to it, right? You can't build flying things just that easily, right? There is all kind of physical constraints, chemical constraints, a lot of real world things. In IT, your imagination is the limit, right? And it is so empowering to me to kind of feel that we could build whatever we wanted. And now, particularly with how technology has evolved in the last 20 years, you know, you could have a virtual reality thing plugged into your app. You could do anything with mobile devices, an incredible amount of stuff. So that's kind of what even today, and I hope till my dying day, really keeps me excited and passionate about technology, is the fact that we are only limited by our imagination, our abilities to spend enough time on things. But beyond that, the entry barriers have never been lower in the history of mankind for literally anything else in the world.
Sure. So in terms of your career when you got started, like what were you focusing on as an IT professional?
So I started my career, I started with Microsoft Technologies, and you know, that was very accessible at that point of time, relatively speaking. And then I got an opportunity to get into the CRM space with Siebel. This is around 98, 99, and you know, that was incredible. Siebel just blew my mind away. That's just the idea of a CRM and how it can bring everything together for sales, service, field service. In those early days, it was just incredible to see how businesses transform themselves. You know, we talk about digital transformation today, and it almost seems, it has to me a little bit of a fad element to it, because companies have been transforming for the last 2 decades, if not more.
Sure, sure. So when you got started in IT, were you a developer? Were you a more functional, a BA? What was your entry point from a skills perspective?
So I started as a developer, and then Siebel had its own language that you could program in, and then Of course, it was still more configuration-centric or declarative from a Salesforce perspective today, right? So I kind of moved out of development into, I started with C++ and .NET and then moved into Siebel development and configuration and then eventually into Salesforce.
Sure. And so then looking at the early days of Siebel, what were the kind of the flagship projects or pieces of work that you were engaged in?
So I did a lot of work for call center automation, Salesforce automation, frankly, a lot of things that even today are major areas that tech companies undertake. Things that really interested me were like integration and building some early prototypes. So I prototype with mobile apps in, at that time. We used to have like Palm Pilot had its own SDK. So I was fooling around with things like that. There was a Windows handheld device version that I was trying to use. Bunch of things like this. The integration of Office apps was newer, so I did some work. I did a lot of work in that Microsoft Office Business app, a thing where you could, you know, now it's all we take it for granted, but at that time, the ability to pull like Siebel data into Excel, update it, and push it back. I did a lot of interesting things like that.
Sure. And did you see the demise of Siebel coming?
To be honest, not really. I think it was only, because Siebel was a very dominant and extremely comprehensive data model. It's probably still is an incredible product in its own right. I think it was really the transition of Siebel over to Oracle, at which point, you know, the whole fusion and everything that was supposed to come and kind of really revolutionize the space didn't do it. I think the change of, you know, the sort of the rise of Salesforce has more to do with the business model design than with the technology elegance, at least in early days. But I did not see it. Eventually just got to a point where, you know, it felt like what we were trying to do with Siebel was very limiting because of everything that had to be provisioned. And in Salesforce, you could just open an account with a gmail.yahoo address and then boom, you are in business. So
sure. And did you see people exiting the market at mass, or was it like a gradual thing that, you know, Salesforce just started taking customers and taking, I guess, specialists in the field? Was it gradual, or was it just all of a sudden this thing called Salesforce was starting to dominate?
I think it was initially it was quite gradual up until a point where then it hit the tipping point, and then all of a sudden, you know, I think in 2002, 2003, I think that sort of the tipping point happened, at least in my knowledge, because I knew a lot of my Siebel friends and colleagues who continued in the Siebel space for a while. And then all of a sudden, you know, like Salesforce was everywhere. And then I think from 2003, 2004 to like now is just this hockey stick rise of Salesforce.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was it about Salesforce, the company, and then also the platform and technology that really got your interest and made you want to join Salesforce?
So I have always felt that I'm originally from India. So, you know, the access to technology was a bit harder. The thing that I've always felt is any company that comes around and democratizes access to technology enables people to build a career, make a living, and do this dramatically easily. Like, they would just succeed by that one simple action. It doesn't matter if your technology is elegant, awesome. Even if it's not, just the groundswell of people backing it is going to take you somewhere. That's kind of what Microsoft did in the early days with Visual Basic and, you know, and .NET and all of that, because your other option to learn like a mainframe or something was just very hard. You would not have access to a mainframe, right? But on a PC, on a commodity PC, you could just learn how to do things. It was the same with Salesforce. Before Salesforce came around, learning Siebel was not easy. You had to either work for a customer or a partner or spend a huge amount of time and money. They will ship you stacks of DVDs. You have to install servers, configure Oracle, right? There was all this stuff that made it really hard for people to do what they wanted to do. Salesforce made it simple, super easy. Just put in an email address. You're in business. You can do things. And so I think that really excited me. I also loved the vision that Mark Benioff had, and you know how he's espoused that sort of a egalitarian company that not only wants to make money for the stockholders, but wants to do good in the world. And that really, really inspires me.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So you joined Salesforce, the business, and you were with them for a number of years. So what were a few of your highlights from that time? And what is it like being a Salesforce employee?
Yeah, so I joined Salesforce in 2003. And that was still, you know, the early days of, I was part of the customer success group. It was the early days there, right? The group was on expansion. it was incredible to see so many amazing, talented people from a lot of different backgrounds, right? When you joined Salesforce in 2003, you could not possibly have had like 10 years of Salesforce experience. So a lot of things were forming and norming, and you had people with Java background and .NET background and mainframe backgrounds, and a lot of business people and MBA backgrounds. It was this melting pot out of which so many of these amazing things have come out. So, you know, like the CTA, the whole certification track, a lot of the content you see today in Trailblazer really kind of fermented and matured in the early days there. In terms of the projects I did, some notable things where I spent a lot of time at some of Salesforce's extremely large customers, like the first or second largest implementation in the world, had an opportunity to do a lot of work in integration, a lot of cutting edge stuff before it became mainstream. It was great to being, you know, someone on the inside and working with very, very large enterprise customers gave me an opportunity to learn from some of the best in business in San Francisco, which, you know, in general at that time was a bit harder to get access to otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you can't go into too much detail around what the projects were, but for, you know, we all hear of big projects, and in each of our regions, there might be bigger customers than others. And what we would say is a kind of enterprise level project or a complex project. When you say like the biggest projects that or biggest customer bases that Salesforce have, what kind of numbers are we talking, like user bases?
You know, you're looking at like some of the largest companies in the world, right? So you're talking about 100,000 plus full license users of Salesforce, right? You're talking about hundreds of million or close to a billion contact records, you know, like things like that, billions of activity records, like everything, you know, from a performance, scale, optimization is completely different at that level. So it's just the sheer scale of these customers. And you don't just go and do a release in like in 3 months, right? These are like year-long projects. There is an incredible amount of scrutiny and thought in everything. The good news is it's really exciting when people talk about it from a technology perspective. The bad news is that experience is mostly worthless elsewhere. If you go to a smaller or mid-sized enterprise, a lot of that experience is really not that relevant because you're not dealing with that level of scale problems. So I think that was very interesting. The other thing that of late I have seen, which has really changed this equation, is that if you look at Salesforce today, the usage has dramatically changed, right? From just being a CRM or a call center Salesforce automation platform, it's now kind of ventured into becoming this enterprise-wide layer of engagement, interaction, e-commerce, marketing, right? And with that expansion, one of the notable things, particularly from a technology and enterprise architecture perspective, is that we have kind of ventured outside of the classic B2B solutioning into more of a B2C type solutioning. So an example of that is, you know, today, most mid-size and large customers have their Salesforce connected with streaming infrastructures like Kafka and, you know, other ones like that. A lot of Amazon Web Services or Azure or Google Cloud are integrated. So today, you know, even if you are a mid-sized company, you may be pushing out in-app notifications to millions of potential customers and prospects. A lot of those kind of things are happening. So what you're seeing is even with the existing customers or the new ones, there is a variety of new use cases really driven by a very social media type behavior. You know, like only Facebook or LinkedIn in the past had this challenge of how do I notify billions of people, right? But now what's happening is, if not billions, for hundreds of millions of people is not unheard of. And the other thing you see is particularly as India and China, you know, come more and more into the Salesforce fold, like those are the new markets, right? If you in the United States and Europe and in other places, Salesforce has a significant penetration. But these new markets in India and China are going to be incredibly large from a volume perspective because you've got like 1 billion plus people in these two nations. Completely different scale and challenges. Very exciting time to be in this environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to think of it like that as well, and the scale of opportunity that there still is, rather because that, you know, Salesforce are a massive business already, but there's still a lot of opportunity out there that they can continue to grow that hold. So it must have been a really hard thing for you to do to leave Salesforce because you were successful, you'd been there a very long time, you were comfortable, and there was still opportunity, right? So how did that come about?
Great question. And thanks for asking. I think this is, I want to share this particularly from the heart because I went on this journey. It took me a long time. I absolutely love Salesforce as a company, the culture, the technologies. And, you know, not a day goes by where I'm like, ah, it would be so cool to go back to the mothership and do these things. So it was not an easy decision for sure. I really love my job, my bosses, the environment I was in. I think more than anything, it was just the idea of trying to do something on your own. You know, I was at an age and at a point in my career where I thought, if I don't do this, it gets progressively harder and harder as you age. So that was one of the criterias. The second was I felt ready. You know, I'd been in the space for so long. And that is one message I want to give to anybody who's listening to this. Take your time. You know, we have far more time than we imagine. And we also have very little time to waste. So take your time in terms of being comfortable, getting ready. You will know in your heart and mind that, you know, you're at a point where you can go take a chance, you know, do something, try something out. So I waited for that moment. And I also wanted to do something in a space that I would be passionate about and which would solve a real problem. So, you know, data privacy, I was sitting in an event that Salesforce did actually in UK, and the Salesforce Council was talking with customers about data privacy and GDPR. And that was the first I heard of it. And I'm going, wow, like that's a huge challenge for almost every one of my customers. And that's kind of what, you know, I was like, okay, it's a now or never. If I don't do it now, I'll again get enamored into other cool technology stuff and I'll probably not take a chance.
Sure. How do you make that leap, right? Because you're employed, you're on a salary, I can imagine a fairly good one as well. How do you go from that to right, I'm going to build a product? Do you do it at the same time? Like, is it something that you take time out, like weekends, you're trying to build this product, or you just take the leap and start building something? And also, do you do that yourself, or do you immediately like find other people to help build it?
Yeah, great question. So you're right. It wasn't easy. You know, definitely you are in, you work for Salesforce, a really good paying company, great benefits, you have stock options, like a lot of enticing things to leave in and get away from. And I worked at Salesforce for 7+ years, right? Like, you're very used to of where you work for. That is part of your identity. I think more than money, the hardest thing is to move away from that identity. Like, my biggest worry was, I'll quit today. What happens tomorrow morning when I get up? Like, do I just sit in front of a screen and stare at something, right? It takes a long time to build a business, particularly a product business. Consulting, I think, is still relatively more straightforward. You can be a contractor somewhere, and it's, in some ways, it's still a job that pays you. It's a different mechanism of getting paid. A product is a long, hard road. And it was quite a difficult decision. I struggled with it. Things that helped me in that space were, you know, while I was at Salesforce, I did an incredible amount of research just to understand if there is a market, you know, like how do customers solve this problem today? What are these requirements actually? What do they need to do for GDPR or CCP? Because I don't come from a legal background. So I had to spend the time to understand privacy laws, the challenges, and what could you possibly do to solve them? What would be the right approach to solving them? Because that's one of the things I feel like a number of times, a very key component of identifying an opportunity is to really figure out if you understand how you would solve it. I did not want to do a half-baked solution. Like, I can do better things. You know, like, I don't have to build something and just kind of clamor and say, oh, look at this, you know, half-baked thing I did. I'm going to put my name on something after spending 20 years in technology. I really wanted to make sure it has an enterprise perspective. So I think those things took a lot of my time. I did, you know, like bits and pieces. I tried out a few things. I am a technologist. So, you know, it was good to sort of kick tires on some of the assumptions I was making. But then, you know, one fine day after I quit, I just rolled up my sleeves, sat down and spent a huge amount of time just day in, day out building a version one of it. So I that's the approach I took. I know the whole MVP idea and go and talk to customers and all that. But frankly, when you are doing a job in a company, it's kind of hard to do that. And in a number of cases, it's also probably not appropriate. So I took the advantage of being employed in terms of just, you know, making up my mind and doing the underlying research more than anything.
And then you had to jump in with both feet.
Yes.
So do you believe in the, I know you were saying you don't want to put your name to a product that potentially, you know, isn't fit for purpose or has some areas of improvement, but is like a lot of people say that if you're not embarrassed by your first release or your first product, then you took too long. Like, do you see that angle as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think my background is enterprise architecture, right? So like for me, that it was important to have a well-defined city plan than it was to have a well, you know, to pick up a kitchen tile, right? From an example perspective. So I wanted to have a construct, a framework in my mind that needed to be fairly well thought out in terms of how would we be able to solve these problems. But then when it comes to actually solving those problems, the actual engineering effort, yeah, my version one was somewhat embarrassing, right? So we took the time to build feature by feature by feature. We iterated. We still follow a very agile methodology. We do like 4 releases a year, primarily because one, the privacy ecosystem is changing and customers' needs are evolving. And two, it's the nature of software, right? You kind of want to iterate. The thing that's more important is, are you directionally headed in the right manner, right? Like from a strategy, from a product roadmap, from an enterprise architecture perspective, our thinking needed to be sound and scalable and, you know, sustainable.
Sure. So in terms of solving problems, can you give us some insight on the kind of problems you are solving now for your customers?
Absolutely. So we typically solve 4 categories of problems within data privacy. And that's, in my opinion, that's mostly the universe of data privacy. So there is this idea of the foundation. You know, you want to have privacy statements, terms and conditions. You want to have an inventory of what kind of personal data you process. You want to do what is known as a DPIA, data protection impact assessment. So things like that. So that's the first category that our product solves. So we do almost everything in that space except DPIs, which we are working on now. So if you want to do multi-regional terms and conditions, privacy policies, if you want to store proof that someone accepted your privacy policy before you send them emails, we do all of that natively in Salesforce. The second category on top of that is what we call privacy rights automation. So if you are under GDPR or CCPA, individuals have rights, and by law, businesses are obligated to service those rights. So if you wanted a copy of your data, if you wanted a company to remove your information, so portability or right to be forgotten. So we automate all of that in Salesforce natively. So essentially in 2 clicks, if we can extract and give someone's information or erase or anonymize their information, do things like that. We follow a very standards-based approach. So everything is well documented from a posterity perspective. I've spent a lot of time in regulated sectors with insurance, FinServ, and others. So we wanted to be extremely thorough in terms of having an auditability to what was done, by whom, when, you know, all of that, so that if a company has to eventually have a proof for this, all of that is there. So that's the second category, privacy rights automation. The third major area that we do a lot of work in is consent management and communication preference. And really, that's the integration of your CRM with marketing technologies such as Marketing Cloud, Pardot, Marketo, Eloqua, MailChimp, et cetera. And the idea is, how do you get consent from someone when they fill up a lead form or download your PDF or whatever it is, right? And how do you then manage and maintain it as they move in the life cycle from a lead to a contact or a customer to maybe a community user? So all through, Cloud Compliance, our product essentially manages consent and the synchronization with marketing tools and a self-service privacy center and things like that. So this also gives you like a 360 degree, like a single view of customer consent and all their interaction and history from a privacy perspective. The fourth area, finally on this, is really around data retention and minimization. And with certain laws, particularly GDPR, and I know this is very true, I think, in UK and Australia. So in UK, I think the limit for how long you can keep information around for X customers, I think, is 6 years. And in Australia, it's 7. So how do you manage and automate that in Salesforce? So Cloud Compliance allows you to do that. You can set rules and privacy policies and retention policies, and we can essentially delete records or anonymize records and do things like that. The other area in data management that we do is data masking, which is, again, some of these things now Salesforce has also come out with. They have a data masking, and Customer 360 does a few of the things that we do. So then that's the idea, that in data masking, when your information moves from production or to sandboxes, we can mask it or anonymize it. So that way it is protected from a breach type impact in sandboxes, because sandboxes typically have very low level of security compared to production.
Sure. And it's such a complicated area. And like you said, there's so many different regulations across different countries. And there are so many small businesses as well using Salesforce that wouldn't even know about some of the rules. So like, is it a tool that's aimed predominantly at like enterprise customers, or is it, are the products suitable for a range of different customer types and sizes?
Great question. So we see a lot of traction from mid-size and large enterprises. We do have some customers that are relatively smaller in size. I think the way we have designed the whole thing, our intention was that, frankly, when we initially released the tool, our intention was it's mostly so easy to configure, you can do it yourself. And that is still the construct of the design. But what we discovered after our initial set of customers was that the customer success component that has made, that's the secret sauce, in my opinion, of Salesforce is customer success. And the customer success component of our product was not working out well in the self-implementation mode. So now we've changed our approach a bit, and we don't sell our product and let customers figure out how to use it. So we help them with an implementation. But we have otherwise our pricing, our product, everything is designed so that once it's implemented and set up and configured and we do a knowledge transfer, then customers of any size can literally run it by themselves. That is one of the key areas, I want to imbue in our DNA, is that we are not in the business of trying to be a professional services company. We are not trying to be a consulting company. So our professional services engagements are fairly small and fixed cost, because we are just trying to make sure that the customers are successful with it. And then all future upgrades and supports and everything, we'll do them, at no charge.
Sure. So you're I think it's around 18 months in. What would you do differently?
What would I do differently is I would probably jump into something like this 3 years ago. So my advice to people is, again, I said something slightly counter earlier. While you would know when you were ready, I think I knew 3 years ago that I was ready. But it was just like I kept on, putting things for myself, saying, oh, no, I need to wait and this needs to happen and that needs to happen. Yes, you have to do some soul searching to see when you're ready, but don't wait too long. It just makes it harder to, to do what you're trying to do. There's more competition, things like that. But also, everything that I've learned literally on a daily basis has forced me to try and be a better version of myself the next morning. You want that cumulative advantage of starting early in your entrepreneurship, regardless of everything else. So if you don't have very hard constraints, like I came to the US, I had to wait till I get a green card. I could have done it before that. I had to wait till I could be a citizen, right? All those other sort of constraints that I didn't have control on. Once you're through them, once you are at a point where nothing like this is holding you back, then the only person holding yourself back is you, and you need to kind of let go of that. The other thing that I would do differently is, we have an extremely talented team. Sandra is our chief revenue officer. She's ex-Salesforce. Peter is our chief marketing officer. I would bring, very talented people much earlier. I waited around because I was a technologist. I was like, well, we want to get the product right. Technologists always want to get the product right. But you want to bring these other functions in early, because what you realize is that they also have to get their things right. It's not just a salesperson can come in and they can start selling whatever you have, right? Sure. So there's a lead time there.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you were with Salesforce for a number of years, and then all of a sudden you're on the other side of going through the AppExchange process and becoming an ISV. And how did you find that process on the other side and going through the aspects that come with having that all approved?
Yeah, so I have heard this quite a few times, and I was frankly worried, about our approval and everything. But it was actually quite nice. I did not have any problems. They asked us a fair bit of question, which I'm a technologist, so I totally get it. I absolutely think they should, right? Because it's a huge seal of approval for companies like us to be in Salesforce AppExchange. And for customers, it's an assurance that Salesforce has looked at it. So, they asked us questions and we answered them. It was easy. If I was doing this for SAP, it would be terrible. I don't know it. But it was Salesforce, I understand enough. So, you know, we were able to get through that. The other thing that I felt is, you know, being on AppExchange is incredible for smaller startups like us, right? In the early days, the kind of, and even today, the kind of visibility we get from AppExchange, you just can't get it anywhere else. I think the one thing that you know, I've seen is that AppExchange has changed its model. I think earlier you used to get a designated partner manager, and now I think it's more tiered. That makes it a little bit difficult if you're starting because you don't have any revenues to get to a higher tier. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one thing that I think they're trying to now address with. They just, I think, launched like a trailhead for partners type thing. But there is a lot of that enablement that would help entrepreneurs who are coming in this space. But having said that, like, I would not want to be anywhere else. I mean, AppExchange is the place to be for any ISV for Salesforce.
Yeah, absolutely. I think obviously, you know, you say it was relatively straightforward for you, but you're coming from the angle of enterprise architecture and knowing best practice, right? I think where companies have perhaps struggled in the past is because they don't have someone like you steering the ship.
Probably. So I know of other folks who went through a similar process just because you find people like you, right, when you're doing these things. And I know that there were, you know, one or two that were asked to do some things differently. But I think it was actually good for them to see the thing, particularly like in my categories, if you play in privacy or a security space, you better have your stuff together, right? Like, there is a huge liability and a risk, not only for my company, but for my customers. Like, I would never, ever want to be in a situation where, you know, somebody suffers because of our lack of attention. And I think that was one of the things that, you know, I really think that the AppExchange, you know, process is really the last line of defense for customers, right? If they're not going to ask, who will?
Yeah, it's so true. So what do you most love about being a business owner, and what does the future look like for you?
So what I really like is it's the freedom. It's the freedom that you can make your own decisions. You really are the sort of captain of your ship, right? Of your destiny. And that, I think, is that's a feeling that nothing else will give you. You know, like, I've been very blessed to work for such amazing companies with amazing people, and I've learned a lot from them, and I still look forward to learning a lot from them in future. But I think as an entrepreneur, the freedom that comes with it is incredible. The problems that come with it are even bigger, right? So obviously you have to manage payroll, you're wearing so many hats, you all of a sudden realize you don't have this massive Salesforce banner that you had behind you, right? I could just go and talk to customers of all sizes everywhere, their senior management, and it's a completely different welcome because you're coming from Salesforce versus, you know, when you are a smaller vendor, you can see that you are now the brand. You have to build the brand and the company and the thought leadership around it. So, you know, that is something that I did not frankly realize as someone who's never done a business before. So, you know, that's still something to that we work on very actively today. What does the future look like? I think a couple of things. One, you know, this just from the global trends perspective, there is a heightened awareness around data privacy. You know, if you look at the fiascos and the weaponization of social media and information, that's kind of driven a lot of it. Regulators everywhere in the world are kind of, you know, rising up to it and making sure that their residents' data is protected. We've already seen GDPR, CCPA, Brazil's LGPD. I know Canada is working on revisions to its PIPEDA. Australia is, you know, considering a lot of such things that are going on actively. India is doing that. China is doing this. So there's a lot more that's going to happen in this space. The challenges that I see is, one, it's a very, very noisy marketplace today. Right, you have a ton of vendors, you know, very, very large ones like OneTrust to Salesforce itself now with, you know, Customer 360. So there's a lot of different ways, a lot of different slivers of the problem that a number of vendors are solving, right, including us. So I think that's a challenge for anybody coming in the space, is that it is fairly noisy. And I think the other challenge is that you see companies that are really sort of data privacy specialists that have come together to do a software company. And then you see software companies that are trying to do something in data privacy space. But to find that balance between regulatory requirements, privacy, data management, architecture, technology, cloud computing, to find the balance between all of that, I think that is incredibly hard. And I think that is where the value is that we can drive to our customers.
Sure. Yeah, well, you're absolutely playing in the right space, right? You say it's noisy, but there's also a lot of noise from the importance and the value that a product like yours can provide to companies that are going through these challenges and are trying to meet the legislations that are in place in their countries. So yeah, it's a noisy space, but it's a high growth area as well. I can see. So I'm sure there's lots of fun to come for you.
Well, we're hoping for that too.
And if anyone listening wants to reach out and pick your brains on anything you've said today, be that taking the leap from an employer into the unknown or building an AppExchange product or even some of the problems you're solving for customers, where's the best place for them to reach out?
So I'm very active on LinkedIn. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn. And you can also reach out to me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is KaizenMantra, KaizenMantra. And that's kind of a philosophy also I espouse to the Japanese idea of Kaizen as, you know, constant improvement. So anyway, those would be two places. You can also reach out to us via plumcloudlabs.com, which is our company.
Yeah, perfect. Well, look, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed hearing more about your journey and the problems you're solving, and I'm sure our audience will. And best of luck for everything that's to come.
Thank you so much, Ben. I so appreciate you doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.